Hi, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll talk college football with Paul Feinbaum, and we'll get picks from Jeff Ma and James Carville. But first, alas, commerce.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
They were up on a plate.
Those are can't-miss burgers.
Yes. In tin foil, up on a plate, on a counter.
So the patties are formed.
Patties are formed. And I went over to Michael's house last night to say hello, and I got a text with a picture of that same plate with one hamburger left. And it said, and Carol wrote, and then there was one. The dog ate three.
Well, she saved
raw
you one.
Hamburgers.
Yeah. I think that's the story. She saved you one.
That's pretty thoughtful.
I think it was because Carol finally got over there and said, what are you doing?
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Later in the show, people will write to us in the mailbag segment about this, because people write all the time about whatever we discussed the day before. So I'll save my thoughts on that until that particular part of the segment.
So what happened to the last burger?
I ate it. Carol made
it. Did you cook it?
Carol cooked it indoors. We didn't bother to start the grill. We just made it on a griddle inside.
I think Jessie was asking for more seasoning when she left that on the counter.
Yes, that was her critique.
Unbelievable.
Under-seasoned.
You know. This dog.
And looks completely guilt-free as I stare at her now.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, because she's up on her chair. So, I'm serious now. This is not laughter. This is November 22nd, 2023. If you are a person of my age, November 22nd means only one thing. November 22nd, 1963, the assassination of John Kennedy in Dallas, Texas. And we all, I mean, for other people, I don't expect you to have that. What would be the seminal date in your life? I mean, it might be 9/11. It would be 9/11, right? I mean, and I understand that. For some people, it might be landing on the moon. For some people, it might be the explosion of the Challenger.
Yep.
You know, these are all things to consider. There are a lot of things out there. But if you are my age, it's John Kennedy being shot. I'm in school at the time. I'm in high school at the time. And I don't know what's going on. I mean, you have to sort of remember that there's in 1963, there's no internet. There's no cell phones. There's no immediate communication. You can't find out what's going on in the world. You can't find out what's going on in the next room. It doesn't exist. You live your life as you walk from place to place. And you can't have a radio in school. Maybe you can now. Maybe you can have phones, but you couldn't then. So there was no way of knowing what was going on. But I knew something was going on, because teachers were crying. They were crying in the hallway. They were crying in their classrooms. They were crying on their way to what was called at that point the teacher's room. Did you have that at Murray, the teacher's room, like a lounge? If teachers had some time off, they would go.
Yeah, there'd be a lounge. That's where you'd have your copy or, you know, your mailbox.
Right. So that's, teachers were crying. So everybody knew, well, what is this? Why are teachers crying? And we had an intercom system in the school so that you could, from a central location, the principal's office, you could get on the intercom and your voice would be in every single room. Not a picture of you, not like they can do today with Zoom, none of that. No, just your voice. And at about 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, somewhere around 2 o'clock, it seemed to me, as I remember, because it was late in the day, late in the school day, a woman named Mrs. Klein came on. Her name was Ruth Klein, and she was the creative writing teacher, and she taught honors English for seniors. I was a freshman or a sophomore, something like that. I knew who she was, but I had no dealings with her. And she talked about how everyone's life has changed now, and she said, due to the tragedy in Dallas. And I didn't know what she was talking about. She was never, I remember this distinctly, she was never specific. My guess is she thought that might be too traumatic for a lot of people. That's my guess. But so there were people in the school that didn't know, and then the buzz started, and then some people knew, and then everybody knew in 10 minutes. Once it was unveiled in this way, everybody then knew in 10 minutes. And John Kennedy was shot by Lee Harvey Oswald, former Marine sharpshooter, who was in turn, a day or two later, shot and killed by Jack Ruby, a restaurant owner or a nightclub owner in Dallas, Texas. So we don't know now, and we've never known why this happened. Not definitively, because we couldn't talk to Lee Harvey Oswald. I think most people, there was something called the Warren Commission report, which said that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. And people my age have always accepted that. And I was thinking today as I was walking the dog, because I knew I was going to talk about this, what would his reason have been? And some people believed it was a right-wing plot in the South and in Texas. I've never really believed that. I did know that his wife, Marina, was of Russian extraction. And I thought maybe that had something to do with it, because this is the height of the Cold War. This is just a short amount of time after, you know, the blockade of Russian missiles in Cuba.
Again, missile crisis, yeah.
So maybe, you know, I don't know. But I don't know. Nobody really knows. There have been so many books and movies made. The Oliver Stone movie is wild. I'm not saying it's not a good movie. It's a very good movie. But if he's right, he'd have you believe that 5,000 people knew about this. That's not even plausible for a second. But as I say, in my life, and this is 60 years, in my life, this is the touchstone. This is the end of the innocence. When Don Henley sings the end of the innocence, it's not about this. But this is the end of the innocence for me. There are other things for other people. In my mind, you know, I relive the next 4 days. And I see John and Caroline saluting as the casket goes by. I mean, I'm never going to get that out of my mind. I mean, the Kennedys, that was Camelot. That was magic. I mean, were the Bushes magic? Maybe, I don't know. But not to me, because you can only have this once. It's not something that's recreated. And it remains, in my mind, the worst thing that ever happened in the country. I'm sure that there are worse. I'm sure there are for other people. But this was the biggest moment of my life.
Sure.
You know, and I think that anybody of a certain age, and so it's 60 years ago, I think you probably have to be 65 and older. Because when you're five, you look at your parent, you know something happened.
Yeah.
You know something happened, and eventually you come to realize it. So at Wilbon's age, I think it would be this as well. But I certainly understand if it's 9/11. I certainly get that, because that killed so many people. An attack. That was a military-style attack on the United States of America. There's no other way of looking at that.
And
there are other things that stand out. And this one, and... You know, so I can't get past any, I mean, if I don't know it's November 22nd, I'm good. But if I see that on a calendar, I see that on a date, or Nigel says to me yesterday, you know, tomorrow is, I go, okay, well, that changes how we're going to do the show. And for, you know, I would say for other people, if they're people older than I by a sufficient amount of time and they're still alive, Pearl Harbor could be it.
Yes, absolutely.
Dropping the bomb could be it.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I get all of those things. But for me, it's John Kennedy. It's John Kennedy. So I won't be morose, I promise.
Well, there were two musical sort of ties into this. One was...
Well, the Beatles came as a result. They lightened the mood within 4 or 5 months.
There was a pallor over the country for those months.
Yes.
And then the Beatles, what was it, February of 64?
Yeah.
That was the Ed Sullivan.
Yeah.
And it was almost like the Wizard of Oz, where you go from black and white to Technicolor, and the sort of live, you know,
yes,
everything. And the other thing was, and I wasn't aware of this, the great Phil Spector Christmas album.
Came out that day.
Came out this day, November 22nd, 1963, and it didn't sell at all because
nobody
was in the mood. Now, it ended up getting well-received years later, but that just tells you sort of, you know, again, the impact
was,
that had on everyone.
There was a pallor over the entire country. I'm telling you, there's nothing. It's so vivid in my mind, teachers crying. And by the way, the teachers are... You know, there's a lot of teachers in their 20s. They're not much older than the high school students.
Yeah.
You relate to them. They're crying. They're in the hallway. They're in the classroom, men and women, because this was unthinkable, even though it had happened before in the United States of America, and it happened all over the world, these assassinations. But this one, you went, oh, no, he's so young. He's so young. What are you doing? So... we will lighten the mood, I promise. We'll have Paul Feinbaum when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua, and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter, and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film, and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Herschel Tucker Band, not the Marshall Tucker Band.
Right.
The Herschel Tucker Band.
Can't you see? Was that the big song?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mike from D.C. writes, thanks for all you do for musicians among the littles. You pay a shout out to us on the pod, worked. The Herschel Tucker Band has shows coming up on November 25th, that's in a couple of days, at Big Truck Farm Brewery in Parkton, Maryland, and December 8th at the Gearhouse Brewing in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. So I hope you can play our song, The Record Skips, and tell the littles that the November 25th show is the Saturday after Thanksgiving at Big Truck Farm Brewery from 4 to 7 p.m. so people can bring their family to Parkton, or they can hide from them there. In any case, we'll buy a beer for anyone who shouts out La Cheeseria for any one of the podcast gang who comes out. This means you, Jason Lockenfora. He can bring his dog and his family because these days, brewery tap rooms are about the same as the ball pit at Chuck E. Cheese. This is called The Record Skips. It plays in... Paul Feinbaum. So I got to tell you this. The other day on PTI, one of the questions was, you know, what's going to happen? And I sat there and I said, well, I understand their number one quarterback went out at Florida State. But if they beat Florida, not a very good team, but if they beat Louisville, a one-loss team, and win the ACC championship, and they're 13-0, they're going to make the playoffs. And in text world, and I'm not talking about the internet because I don't read the internet, but people have my number, text world on my phone. I got a lot of people saying, well, you're stupid. You don't know what you're talking about. There is no guarantee. And their position was very simply this. If, and this is your wheelhouse, Paul, if Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC championship, they're both in and Florida State is out. Do you agree with that?
In fact, I do, Tony Kornheiser. And by the way, that was not the Herschel Tucker Band from Spartanburg, South Carolina, was it?
No, it's from Maryland. No, no. And it's not anybody who would have called up Tyler from Spartanburg and called up Babbo. But so you agree with that. Explain. Tell me.
It's a little bit more nuanced than that because, yeah, and forget what this committee guy said last night because they don't ever look at anything. I don't. What do they do for 3 days out there at that 5-star Ritz-Carlton in Dallas? I mean, but I think Alabama is the key there. And when you talk about Alabama, you also have to talk about Texas because
yes.
Texas beat Alabama
second game of the year at Alabama. Yeah. They beat them. If they're both one loss, then what?
Double digits, by the way. It should matter. So to me, Florida State plays in a very weak league.
Yeah.
And, you know, beating Florida, it's not the Tebow Florida, Urban Meyer Florida, the Spurrier Florida. This is a bad Florida team. And I don't count much. I think the Louisville game will matter more. So here's where college football is at its absolute insanity. They will ready for this, Tony? They'll need style points, okay?
Yeah.
They'll need the backup quarterback Rotemacher will need to look good because here's what's in the mind of these committee members. They don't want another blowout like we saw with TCU last year. That was the last thing everybody Tuesday morning, including you, I'm sure, was saying, we can't have that again.
That's right, bad game. Bad game.
So that's a factor, even though they say it's not a factor. So I think you trust Alabama. You're certainly going to trust – I mean, by the way, think about this. Let's say Alabama kicks a 47-yard field goal to beat Georgia. Do you realize that would be Georgia's first loss in 30 games?
Yeah.
I think you know how hard it is to win 30 straight games in college football. Bear Bryant never did. Frankly, there are a handful of people. Bud Wilkinson
did. Yeah.
That has done it.
Yeah.
So I think that has to count for something. And then I would look at it as, you know, if they met on a neutral site, I mean, Alabama would beat Florida State and Georgia would roll over a Jordan Travis-led Florida State. So there's my answer.
So this is – all right. When the NCAA basketball tournament comes around, if your big scorer – and this happened with the University of Cincinnati 10, 15 years ago. If your big scorer is hurt and he's not going to play, you're in the tournament. But your seed is downgraded. If you would have been a one, you end up a four or a five because those people understand how important a singular player can be. I always get the sense in football that they avoid that and they just say next man up. I think you're saying they have to consider that with Florida State.
Absolutely. I think that was Kenyon Martin. And I mean, there's no way you could. First of all, Jordan Travis just isn't a good player. He made that program. He's been there 6 years, Tony.
Yeah.
So he's the leader, and I know that's a cliche, but it's true in college football. And I think you have to factor it in. And I think they will. They say they won't because I don't think – I mean, I sometimes wonder about that guy on Tuesday night, whether there's somebody off screen threatening him. I mean, it's crazy to watch this guy. And his name is Boo, by the way, Boo Corrigan.
Yeah.
I think that's where we are. There are a lot of intangibles. The worst case, there's a couple of bad, really terrible scenarios, and that is that Oregon beats Washington.
Yeah.
Texas runs the table. Alabama beats Georgia. You know, I don't think it matters with Michigan and Ohio State. I think the winner of that game
is
goes, the loser goes home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear Ohio State claim again, hey, we lost to Michigan, let us in. I mean, we went through that last year. And Notre Dame a couple of years ago when they played the COVID schedule. So I think, and there's too many, we've never been here before. Usually Selection Sunday, it's a 4-hour show, and Tony, you watch the first 15 minutes and then you go out and walk your dog because there's nothing else to hear or see.
Right.
I'm usually on in the fourth hour when,
yeah. Let me get – so I would imagine if you are the committee, Paul, you are rooting very hard for Washington to stay unbeaten and you are rooting very hard for Louisville to beat Florida State, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, basically you want to just sweep the trash out. You want to clear the deck so there are no controversies. And the good news for this, you know, this committee, as I say, is that no matter how bad it is, it won't matter because next year there's 12 schools in, and wouldn't this be a fun? It would have been fun to have 12. And by the way, we should have had 12, but the Big Ten commissioner and the Pac-12 commissioner and the ACC commissioner threw a fit when Texas and Oklahoma went to the SEC, and they refused to agree to the tournament starting at 12 in 23.
So this is interesting to me because the next question that I had written down last night after watching that show was, makes you yearn for 8 teams, right? I personally think 12 is too much, but I think 8 is the right number. But in any case, the enormous growth of college football in the last 10 years, which has fueled this tournament, because it used to be nothing. There was nothing. Then there was 2. Now there's 4. And now you can see, Paul, that the clamor makes it just worthwhile having more teams, right?
Yeah, because if you go back in time, back to the two or none, back to the two and four, really, once you get past that Sunday, college football dies. I mean, you have this manufactured next week where you have the Heisman, which may be interesting this year and it may not be, and then the Army-Navy game, which is interesting and fun, but it's not like nobody's sitting around arguing over it like maybe they did in the 40s and 50s. And then the next week you get the New Orleans Bowl with a MAC team and a Sun Belt team, and unless you're a gambler, paying attention to after Christmas.
So that's right.
Meanwhile, the NFL is now on Saturday, Sunday, Thursday, Monday, and I mean I can't tell you how many times I've covered the national championship game. And on the Saturday and Sunday, I'm sitting around waiting to go on SportsCenter, and they go, hold on a second, we got an injury for the wild card game. I mean, it's like I'm at the biggest game of the year, and I can't even get on the network. By the way, Tony, who's doing the game?
that's funny. All right, let's go to Ohio State, Michigan. Yeah, my feeling is pretty simple about this. If a head coach wasn't important, we wouldn't be paying him $10 million a year. I've got to believe a head coach is important. It makes me believe that Ohio State is going to win that game. And even if Harbaugh is in the stands sending decoded signals to an assistant on the sidelines, he's not coaching. It makes me feel Ohio State will win. Tell me I'm right or wrong.
I think you might be wrong. And Harbaugh may be the outlier here because, I mean, I might, is he alive? I mean, he seems robotic. I think there's some AI going on in his head. I think he is a really good practice coach. I think he's a good organizer, but I'm not convinced that he plays a significant role. Now, the evidence would support that the only two games that have mattered on their schedule without him, they've struggled. Now,
yes.
he's missed pretty much half the season by now.
I hope he doesn't get paid the full amount because this is the sixth game he's going to miss.
Yeah, so the only thing, this is a head game for Ryan Day, the Ohio State coach. I think he's lost 9 games in 5 years. But, you know, he loses this game, and there will be that hot take artist.
They'll want to fire him. Yes.
There's no doubt. I mean, John Cooper's the name that people return. John Cooper was 2-10-1 against Michigan, and somehow he lasted that long. Ryan Day won't last that long if he keeps losing to Michigan.
I agree with that. I got friends who went to Ohio State, and they're sick of this guy already. And I go, wait, he's won 95% of his games. Get rid of him.
Tony, I think it's the hair dye he uses in his mustache that irritates people.
Maybe. That could be true. Who's likely to get fired? And I bring this up. It's unthinkable to me that Lincoln Riley would get fired, but USC should have better athletes on defense than this.
Tony, strike me dead, but I think Lincoln Riley should be fired. I think he has done the single worst coaching job at a major program that I've ever seen. I mean, this is a top five team. I don't need to tell you because
USC.
You pick up the upper 1% of college football on your show in the afternoon, and you talked about Caleb Williams back in August because he was the biggest name in the game.
Yeah,
I mean, he was in LeBron's town. Playing football, the Heisman Trophy, you don't get bigger than USC quarterback returning Heisman with a shot at the national championship. And they're lucky to be 7-5. I mean, they almost lost to Cal.
I don't understand it. This is USC. This is one of the 3-5 greatest programs in the history of college football. It really mattered. It really matters. And you can't get better athletes on defense when you have all these great athletes on offense, right?
He, you know, he's won Heisman's with Mayfield and Kyler Murray. He's had runner-ups in Jalen Hurts. But and he's a really good quarterback coach, but I think he's a lousy head coach. I watched his teams at Oklahoma get rolled. I mean, 40, 50-point losses in the playoffs to LSU and Joe Burrow a couple of years ago. I saw him get steamrolled. I mean, he's a great assistant coach. He's a good quarterback coach. I don't think he's a head coach.
Is there anybody else? It is unlikely Riley will get fired. Are there people that are likely to be fired?
Well, unless you want to fire Jimbo Fisher again, I don't think there's a big name out there.
Right, okay.
I mean, most of this has gone on. I mean, the Florida coach is hanging on, but he may survive. The problem is that I mean, no, only one school has $77 million to pay off a coach. That was Texas A&M.
It's an unbelievable amount. The two things, if you ask me, what are the two most unbelievable things in college football this year? That's one, and 1A is SMU saying, yeah, we don't need your TV money for the next, I don't know, 100 years. Don't worry about it. We're good. You know, we're good. We had Pat Forty on the other day, and I asked him about that, and he said, have you seen the price of crude oil? It's going up. And these Texas schools, right, Paul? These Texas schools have it.
Every time I go to College Station, it's you check the Wall Street Journal and see if everybody's in a good mood or not, because if oil prices are up, they can buy you. I mean, I'm not saying they're Saudi Arabia, but they're the college football version of Saudi Arabia. They can do whatever they want.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's always a big pleasure for me to have you on. Thanks a lot.
The pleasure was mine. Thank you, Tony.
Paul Finebaum, boys and girls. We will take a break. We'll come back with Carville and Ma. We'll see if they're going to pick some games. Carville allegedly is going to be actually on the show. We'll see. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Well, you wake up in the morning, boy.
This is Paul Evans' Midnight Special. James Carville wanted walk-up music. He wanted walk-up music, so we got it for him. This week's picks with James Carville and Jeff Ma, brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more.
And I should say, this is the cover of the great song originally by Leadbelly.
Leadbelly Ledbetter.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Is the first person to ever use the term woke.
Yeah, that's a line. Yeah, because I woke up in the morning.
He said, well... From born in Shreveport, I think he died in Houston. Something was up there, and he said he talked about the necessity to be woke with your black interactions with the police, which seems like a good idea to me.
Can I tell you something that is very interesting to me about? Because I haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks. I got a letter, I don't know, about a week and a half ago, and the envelope is addressed to me. And it says on the envelope from James Carville, and it says over that, private. And I thought, wow, James has written me a letter, and he knows my address, and so I'm going to open this right now. And inside, they want me to give money to the Senate Majority PAC. Did you know these things went out?
Well, I kind of did. The Onion did a thing that said I was on your back porch and would blow myself up in a suicide vest. I sent so many of them out. They asked me, I'm a, you know, solicitation signing slut. They put something in front of me, I signed it.
But it was so nicely done, individually typed private from James Carville. Wow.
You'd be surprised when people come up to the airport and said, you know, you sent me a letter and I wrote you back and you never called me back.
All right. Okay. Here we go. Right. You're still above 500. You're still making money. 41-37-1. You're 3-4 last week. We got you live and not picks over the phone. What do you got?
What do I got? Let's look at Northwestern. Is this Illinois?
Yeah.
Let's take Northwestern in that little matchup.
I've got Northwestern getting 5.5.
I got 6. So we're going to take
that.
You always say
Wilbon believes they're going to win. Wilbon believes they beat Illinois. We're giving you 6. What else?
You know, a lot of people have done that. Miami, BC. I got BC plus 8.5.
Is that where you're going, BC?
Yeah, I'm going BC.
Okay.
We ramble a little bit here. Navy travels to SMU. It's pretty good. But Navy's getting 18.5, so we're going to gobble those points.
Okay. Navy shut somebody out last week. They pitched a 10-0 shutout last week. Yeah.
You know, Army beat Air Force, which most people realize that was a huge upset.
Yeah.
Air Force was undefeated. There were people that were talking about Air Force being in the playoffs. That was it. It's like a mid-major. Oh, my God. Here comes, you know, Creighton. Stand by. Okay. So we got Navy, SMU, Virginia Tech, Miami, BC.
Oh, wait. Virginia Tech. What's the Virginia Tech?
Virginia Tech. UVA's 2.5 favorite at home, right?
I've got Virginia Tech giving 2.5 on the road.
That's been Virginia plus 2.5 at home, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Not to be. But okay. I'll take Virginia.
You're going to take Virginia.
Yes.
Virginia plus 2.5. Okay.
That's right. And then you're not going to like this at all. But the Commodes travel to Dallas.
Yeah.
And they get an 11, and I'd take them in the 11.
You're going to take them? They're terrible.
You don't get 11 points if you're any good. Okay. That's not a good
match. All right.
They're not giving the Philadelphia Eagles 11 points, okay?
Okay. What else?
Everybody got the big Bills-Eagles shootout.
Buffalo at Philadelphia. What is that?
What's it? Take the over at 48.5.
Over 48.5. Okay.
Right. All right. And I think that we got the SMU, we got Illinois, we got Bartek, we got Miami, BC, we got the over, we got the Commodes, we got the whole thing. Y'all have a good Thanksgiving.
All right. You too, James. Best to everybody at home. James Carville,
thank
boys
you, my
and girls.
Everybody. Thank you.
So we did 6 games this week. Now, James usually does 7. But, you know, it would be great if they were called the Commodes. I mean, I would go for that. I would go for that, the Commodes. That would be fine. Just fine. So this letter, it looks, you've seen this, right? It looks so personal.
It's the type font that makes it feel so real.
Right on the front.
But it's good to know that you're not alone.
From James Carville. That's a great line that I wrote you back. You never wrote back. How come that happened? That's a wonderful line. All right, so we're endeavoring to get Jeff Ma. We don't do this. We never do this
efforting
in the way that you want us to do it, where it's stitched in perfectly.
I've only asked you for years.
Yeah. What to just
pause the recording for this?
Yeah, I don't do that.
And I believe Jeff is with us. Jeff,
can you hear
us?
I'm here.
Jeff, all right, good. You had a good week. 4-1. You won another college game. You're 28-30-1, but Mount 500 is in sight, and there's some weeks to go here, so I'm not worried about you. I am curious, and you make this at as a note, when quarterbacks go out, this has been happening with great frequency this year, more than we've ever seen. Not only do they go out injured, but some of them get benched, and some of them who aren't benched should be benched, but we don't have that information beforehand. How does that affect the line? Like Cleveland, for example. Cleveland came back and won with a guy who, you know, was throwing, completing under 50% of his passes. How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, in the Cleveland game last week, they went from, I think they were 3 or 4 point favorites to all the way down a 1 point favorite. You know, that line move probably was about right. This week, they are 2.5 point underdogs. The look ahead line was 1 point. So, you know, 1.5 points there. I mean, I think the problem with someone like DTR is nobody really knows what to do. And you know, there's all this uncertainty in that Cleveland quarterback situation, even if it's Deshaun or even if it's, you know, because no one knew how healthy Deshaun was. And then if it's PJ Walker, no one knows how good he is. And DTR, I think the place that it's more interesting is to look at the line move and say a Cincinnati game. Where the look-ahead line was Cincinnati favored by sort of 4.5, and Pittsburgh's now favored by 1. So in that case, they're saying Burrow's worth 5.5 over Browning. That even seems maybe a little bit low.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, there's pretty big moves.
What has happened with the Jets? What has happened with the fact that they benched Zach Wilson, which they should have done weeks ago?
This is one that it's hard to know. You know, I personally like the Jets this week because I think that any competent, like semi-competent quarterbacking, you know, like Zach Wilson has been bad, and it's hard to understand why he's so bad because he was certainly very skilled at BYU, and then you come into a situation here where he has offensive tools in Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall, and you would expect that he would be much better than he is, and he's been given chances and just hasn't been. But
no.
That line is Miami, you know, giving 10. The look-ahead line that I'm looking at, and I'm assuming this was early in the season when they thought Rodgers would still play, was 2.5, the Jets favored. So you're talking about a 12.5-point move, which obviously seems like way too much.
It does. That's way too much. All right. Give us what you got this week. You want to take the Jets?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Jets. I'm going to take the Jets plus that 10. I just think it's too many points. And I think that, you know, the Jets will have a competent and more than competent defense. And I'm wondering if this is going to be a similar situation where the team has just kind of been waiting for this and they're going to rally around having a new quarterback and really want to make that decision seem successful and almost like have that Raiders anti-Josh McDaniels moment.
It's amazing who the two quarterbacks in New York are right now. It is amazing, don't you think?
I mean, yes. Obviously, it's crazy to think about that. But we've been seeing this across the NFL the entire season, right? This is the reason we think scoring's down and the overall product is not as good is because there's just a lot of quarterbacks out there that aren't particularly good.
All right, what else you got?
I'm actually going to take Green Bay plus the 7.5 over Detroit. I think I share this the Green Bay is not very good kind of thing with you,
not.
But I think 7.5 points against, you know, in this game, and Jordan Love has shown an ability to keep them in games or to come back and to cover backdoor, all that kind of stuff. But with 7 and a hook, I like Green Bay, and it'd be fun to have something to root for on Thanksgiving.
Okay.
I'm going to take Tampa plus the 2.5 over Indy. Tampa kind of showed me something in that San Francisco game. I expected San Francisco to win that game and cover easily, but Tampa stayed in that game and actually moved the ball a lot against that San Francisco offense, San Francisco defense. And I think a lot of it has to do with Tampa's offensive line being healthy. Baker had, you know, some time given the fact that San Francisco defense is so good on the front line. And plus the 2.5 here over Indy.
Okay, what else?
I'm going to take Buffalo plus the 3.5 over Philly. Philly's coming back after that really quick turn. Buffalo played a good game against the Jets last week. Obviously, their defense played much better. I do worry a little bit about Buffalo's ability to stop Philly's run. I think this might be a game where Philly can just run the ball, which they really haven't been able to do quite as much as they were last year. But I think this quick turn for Philly off of a really big emotional win is an area where I look to, you know, Buffalo plus 3.5, like them here.
Okay.
And then my one college game, you know, I was looking for talking about how I'm doing well in college.
Yes.
My first side. I'm going to actually take Michigan, Ohio State under the 46. I think this is a game that's going to be low scoring. The reason these games have gone over the total in the last few years is because of explosive plays. You know, generally the trend of these games is slow and low scoring, and then Michigan will pop an explosive play, or Ohio State and Marvin Harrison will pop an explosive play. But I think this is one game where the defensive lines are just so much better than the offensive lines that there's going to be low scoring, and I like the under here.
Okay. And who's on Bet the Process this week?
We're actually dark this week because of Thanksgiving.
Oh.
So next week we'll be back. We'll be back with – we're going to be doing some cool stuff for the bowls and maybe some contests. I'm going to talk to Nigel a little bit and see if we can do some sort of like cross promotions with some of the contests we're running for the bowl season.
Fantastic. Okay, Jeff, have a wonderful holiday. Talk to you next week.
You too. Bye, Tony.
Jeff Ma, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will have email and jingle when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all you folks.
That's the Littles from Jingle Fest a few months back.
Yes.
Very lovely. Want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in. I believe they will be open on Thanksgiving. So pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
That's great. Yes. That's it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in. It's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. That's Arlo Guthrie, son of Woody Guthrie. That's his one big hit. And you play this all the time around Thanksgiving.
It's the Thanksgiving tradition song.
Yeah.
And it's not very good, is it?
Well, no, it's a very impressive song.
Yes.
It's just not for me. Not for me. Thanks to our guests today, Paul Feinbaum, Jeff Ma, James Carville. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. Get the show through Apple. Please leave us a review. So here's what we got here. This is from Jack Bishop in Waynesville, North Carolina. Thanks again to you and your crew for providing light and levity in difficult times. The woman related to being by marriage has been undergoing treatment for cancer throughout the fall, and you, Michael, Nigel, and your tremendous guests have given me reason to smile at least a few times a week as our family navigates this time in our lives. Our fingers are crossed. She'll be through treatment at the Mayo Clinic and home to me and the kids by Christmas, which we wish.
Yes.
Now to crunch time. The worst song ever made by a long shot is Wigwam by Bob Dylan. I don't even know the song.
Not familiar with that.
I don't even know the song. If you ever need to pivot away from Crest toothpaste, you can't go wrong with Hedley and Weish. I've never heard of this brand.
Not familiar with
one that. One tube lasts for years, and its mild cleaning agent is enhanced by 2 teaspoons of pure cane sugar, at least according to the cast of SNL circa 1991. Okay. So I don't know that at all.
Must be a fake ad, yes.
Yeah. SNL. Dirty Dancing was filmed just over an hour from my house here in Western North Carolina in a little place called Lake Lure, L-U-R-E, North Carolina. There are a couple of nice golf courses in the area, and you can't beat the views anywhere. The hole that appears in the movie is even playable at a course called Rumbling Bald, if you're into that type of thing. That's information for life,
That's
actually.
Pretty cool, right?
I had no idea where Dirty Dancing was filmed, and I would have assumed it was filmed in the Catskills.
Yeah.
That was my assumption. From our friend Mike Crowley, happy Thanksgiving. As the official short story writer of the podcast and official Denison English professor of Nigel, I bring good news out of the Denison Big Red fencing team's win last week against not one but two Division I squads. Fellow English professor and fencing coach Peter Granbois, I hope I pronounced that correctly, or Granbois, an alternate on the 1992 U.S. Olympic team in Barcelona, thank you, Rosetta Stone, coached his women's fencing team to victory last week against Air Force number 15 and the Ohio State University number 5. They believe it's the first time a Denison team has ever beaten a ranked OSU team in history. The two schools are about 30 miles apart and 30 billion apart in NIL. Neither school is near Africa Road and its traffic problems. Here's hoping Reginald will have similar success the rest of the year. Happy Thanksgiving from Mike Crowley, which is very nice. From Joe Anderson in Alexandria, Virginia. What's that Simon and Garfunkel song that goes, I get up to wash my face. When I come back to bed, someone's taken my butcher box burger. No, someone's taken my place. That's Celia.
Yes, Celia.
That's
yeah.
Celia. Celia. That's dedicated to the dog. Nick Sharkey, Escanaba, Michigan. You buried the lead with your Chessie story. You thaw your butcher box hamburgers. I grill them straight from frozen. Has my whole life been a lie?
I think so.
Michael, you're the grilling officer.
A lot of people do grill burgers frozen.
Really?
Yeah.
I never heard of that.
Thaw everything out.
Yeah, so some people do tricks. They'll also put an ice cube in the middle of a burger if you're using fresh meat. Everyone has a lot of it just depends on what your heat source is.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. From Craig Petrosky in Granville, Ohio.
Oh.
As an owner.
Denison.
That's
where Denison is.
Okay. As an owner of an English Labrador Retriever, shout out to Nigel, I empathize with your frustration with Chessie stealing food off your counter, especially after years of good behavior. But I think I noticed a trend in the situations you shared. In both cases of Chessie's misbehavior, you described the tempting meat as being held in foil. So not unlike Navin Johnson in The Jerk, he's shooting at these cans. It's the foil that is enticing Chessie. If you stop using foil, you remove the triggering mechanism to Chessie's misbehavior. Problem solved. Wow. Okay. I didn't know that. Craig Stevenson, Mobile, Alabama. Regarding dogs stealing food from their owners. My grandfather, or Pawpaw, as we often call our grandfathers here in the South, once had a blue-eyed Merle Collie named Ugly who would intentionally knock over half-full Miller High Life bottles by nudging them with his nose and then lap up the beer off the tabletop. Sometimes before Pawpaw, preoccupied by woodworking or some other outdoor task, even noticed. If Ugly had too much beer, he'd lay down and immediately go to sleep. I was only 14 or 15 at the time, but it remains one of the damnedest things I've ever seen. From Patrick Sitter in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So after Chessie chows down one of her pilfered meals, what toothpaste does she use to whiten her teeth and freshen her breath?
That is a good question.
This is from Neil. Like all of us littles who are owned by dogs, I chuckled at your request for a vet or anyone else to offer a cure for Chessie's counter surfing. As much as we relate emotionally to our dogs and spend hours talking to them, as if they understand every word, they simply live in every moment and act in ways that work for them in that moment. Earlier this year, I experienced the same moment. Every weekday evening after dinner, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage and I lounge in the family room to watch some TV, always commencing with that day's PTI episode. Because I am mostly housebroken, I remove my shoes to recline on the couch. The next morning, I come downstairs to discover that without any warning or reasoning, our 8-year-old Cotton, C-O-T-O-N, Cotton, Monty, who had not chewed anything since he was a puppy, had decimated one of the shoes. Mm. That same day as we were watching PTI again, I looked down to find him chewing up a second pair of shoes right in front of us. They do what they do.
Yes, they say this seems like a good
from
idea.
From Bruce Eppenstein.
Must be something about PTI.
One day it's your bagel sandwich, next day it's your burgers. I'd say keep a close eye on your toothpaste. From Chris Campbell, Gaithersburg, Maryland. By the way, Bruce Eppenstein is from Budden or Budin, Pennsylvania. B-U-D-I-N. Is that near Philly?
I don't know.
Chris Campbell, Gaithersburg, Maryland. When our golden retriever was about five, we were in Cincinnati on a family road trip. At a recent rest stop, we had picked up a dozen Cinnabons, and they were placed the box under several grocery bags in the back of our SUV. There was an entire trunk of suitcases and boys, yet somehow this dog tight-roped its way to the back of the car, dug out the box, and ate all 12 cinnamon rolls.
What do you do with a dozen Cinnabons?
This was after she removed a Costco rotisserie chicken from the box and consumed it all. And after she ate a tray of corn muffins on the counter. Happy Thanksgiving. Don't let Chessie get near the turkey.
Careful with the bones.
From Riot Tool in Omaha, Nebraska. How does an old man make the rest of us feel so old? He casually mentions how the dog we've all grown to love is 9 years old. 9 years. When the heck did that happen? Wyatt, I asked myself the same question. It was just yesterday you were bringing her home from the rescue and crate training the little scamp. Good Lord, now that I think of it, how many Frisbees have you gone through in 9 years?
It's a couple.
Hundreds. Yes, it's hundreds. She eats them and
it's a reminder
and
we need
vomits
to on a
them.
Few more.
That's what she does. From Jason Anschutz in Fargo, North
That's
Dakota.
That's my task.
On Tuesday's show, Michael mentioned that the hammer thinks his toothpaste is spicy. My six-year-old child, a masculine child, also thinks toothpaste is spicy. Anything with that minty aftertaste is no good for him. But here's where he loses me. He also thinks Coca-Cola is spicy. I think it's the carbonation. I've tried to explain what spicy actually means, but he seems to think I'm a rum-dum. I may have to introduce him to jalapeno peppers. Sometimes show, don't tell, works best.
Yes, last night at dinner, the lemonade was far too spicy for the hammer, so we had to dial him back to apple juice, and that took a little bit of while to arrive at the table, so he had to leave before the check came.
Okay.
Dash, dine and dash.
From Jason Blazer in Lake
Thanks
Warren,
for dinner,
Michigan.
Grandpa.
My youngest non-masculine child, Tinley, referred to as the monster pants, is similar to the hammer in that every toothpaste besides some watermelon junk that the woman who I'm related to by marriage buys is too spicy. I tell her they are minty and that spicy is reserved for things like the hot sauces she sees me use. Well, it turns out I am wrong and don't understand because I have been using old person toothpaste for too long. Lousy ingrate, being accurately cruel. From Dr. Oscar Ruiz, assistant professor of biology at Houston Christian University. In the words of the great Allen Iverson, toothpaste, we're talking about toothpaste, not an MRI, not Cigna. We're talking about toothpaste.
Not the mouthwash.
Come on, man. What are we even doing out here? Love the show.
Never the mouthwash.
From Chris Bancells in Forest Hills, Maryland. After we finally get your coffee ice cream rankings, will we be moving on to toothpaste? Well, I'm not going to rank them. For someone who signs his name Cowboy Jesus in Phoenix, Arizona. Got to like that. What happened to that Ipana prophet? You asked. The inheritance went to help finance Woodstock. Is that right?
I was unaware of that. That would be wild, wouldn't it?
Wow. Wow. And from Peter Jennings, of course, not that Peter Jennings. We're back visiting Tokyo, and we're hanging out at the Tokyo American Club. Yes, you remain hugely popular in Japan from the super terrific happy hour, but I digress. Surprised you did not know St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Your good friend Thomas Friedman hails from there. I didn't know that. I didn't know Tom Friedman was from there. The only reason I know this is actually my older brother has lived there now for almost 40 years. Irrelevant, I know, except he was general manager of the Minnetonka Club for 35 years. Minnetonka is the oldest private club west of the Mississippi and has hosted multiple USGA events, including Bobby Jones winning the USAM in 1927. When the snow melts, let's go play. You and Michael would love it. I appreciate your show more than ever here. Helps with the jet lag and keeping up to date on the evolution of toothpaste, your golf success, and the worst songs in musical history. Sean in San Diego. Chuck Todd said, Taylor Swift seems pretty normal for a famous person, but does she change the direction of a toilet paper roll when she's in a stranger's house? For those of you who are historians of this show, Chuck Todd does that. He likes the under, not the over. Get out of your bike tent, everyone, as always. Do wear white.
What's that, chicken? Every night is the chicken. Dad. Holy God almighty. Is it possible just once we could get something to eat for dinner around here that's not the... chicken?
Hey, Dad.
I'm just saying.
Dad. ghost into the night. All I get is a click, 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 oh, of the singer repeating her line. That's when my charming companion, so suddenly, unfastens from my side.
Tender, turn my call into a rail.